I was like, this is my time, because Maggie's old enough and my kids are all okay, and I had family that could come take care of them. And I was like, this is my trip. I get to go on this one. And I was so excited. And I hated to be like, so do you want to go? But I was sitting there, and I said, so what did you get out of the service this morning? She goes, I don't know. I kind of, you know, had trouble, but then I kind of caught on, and I was doing good. I said, oh. She goes, why? What'd you get? And I was like, I'm not going to say anything, because I want her to get there. And she's like, so what'd you get out of it? I was like, I really want to go to Haiti. And she was like, do you really? And it just started clicking. Everything just went. And it wasn't like that for all three of us, but by the end of it, God had told all of our hearts, this is your trip to go. This is the one you get to go on. And all of us were just excited. We figured, you know, we're going to suffocate, but we're going to be happy suffocators, because we're going to enjoy this. And we had a good time. It was fun to go together. It was fun to be with new people. It was fun to see our family in Haiti. It was something that I told them, you know, we live different lives in some ways, but in other ways, it's just a lifestyle. We can live here with everything, but if we don't serve God here, we don't win. They can live there with less than we have, but if they don't serve God, they don't win. And I would tell them that, and they just kind of, the language barrier kind of got caught here and there, but I think that we tried to impress upon them, we're not here because we think that you're sad people. We're here because you're a church that is part of our church, that is part of God. And we tried to really focus on that. And I hope that as you listen to our story tonight and as you enjoy what we got to enjoy, that you can feel a part of who they are, because we have had something to do with them for so long, and we still can. We can still encourage them. We can still help each other. It's not because they live so much worse than us. It's because we're part of the family of God. There was some confusion when we got started just about who was getting what. We thought we were just on for the ride, you know, just hop on and bring your bag and this is going to be fun. And then they said, well, maybe that wasn't how it was going to be. Did we not think maybe we should take something? And we thought, yeah, we probably should if we should. And then it came around that, no, we shouldn't. We didn't need to take anything. It was taken care of. And then we did need to take everything. If we didn't take it, it wasn't there. And then, no, it wasn't coming. And we really wasn't sure at all until about 2.5 weeks they said, yes, you have to get whatever it is that you're going to take. And we all went, okay. And we buckled down and started flying around. Aaliyah is going to tell you a little bit of what that was like.
2 weeks, about 2 weeks out, we decided, I had talked to Stephen. Stephen Gibson said that, yeah, he thought that Dr. Miller was going to get it. And anyway, it kind of came around. So I started calling around, and Mommy started handing stuff out at work, putting boxes out. I called Melody Sankey to see what she, you know, where she had got her supplies for Honduras. And she was like, well, I don't know. They start gathering it a year ahead of time. Like, okay, I got 2 weeks.
Oh, good.
So I started gathering, and I was like, okay. So I called CVS. CVS said they could not help because they are not allowed to give out if they have too much. Destiny went to Walmart. They said that it took 2 weeks, but they may be able to give us $100. Okay. That didn't come through. And let's see, who else?
Went to Walgreens.
The hospitals. We went all the different ones. Our hospitals all, I think some of them gave like the different kinds of, for dressings and that kind of thing. We got a few of that stuff. Not very much, but a little bit. We did get some gloves that were sterile gloves, which we were very thankful for by the time we got there. And then we got other gloves too, but we needed all of it. We got to Jade. I don't know if anybody knows Medicine Plus. We're going to give him a big old handout. Jade at Medicine Plus. He is the pharmacist there. He owns it himself. I told him what was going on, that we're going to Haiti, that we needed stuff. I said, I have 2 weeks. Is there any way you can get it? He goes, well, I can get it the next day. I said, well, can you give us any kind of a discount? He goes, I'll give it to you at cost. I said, okay. So we started gathering. We had a list that Dr. Stephen Miller wanted. He said, this is what we need. And I'm talking a long list. And he said, and I emailed it to him. And he looked at it, and he goes, well, we can do this, 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 this. And he named all the stuff off. And he priced it.
Prescription drugs.
And it was prescription drugs. Some of them was with him. He actually came up with more later. But some over-the-counter stuff. They said as much ibuprofen and Tylenol as you can get. Stuff like ranitidine, which is for your stomach, gas pills, anything like that that you can get, which is some over the counter. So we got most of it from Jade. Anyway, got it all, and I was picking it up. What day did we pick that up? Thursday before we left on Thursday. There was more on Tuesday. But anyway, Thursday before we left on Thursday, I went in and was picking it up and told him what all we needed. He gave us a glucometer, which we didn't have, with the strips. And actually, we ended up getting two boxes of strips, which worked out really nice because when we got over there, there was a guy that had a glucometer that didn't have strips, and those strips fit that glucometer. So we had an extra box that we could give him. But anyway, we got there, and I said, okay, it's $782 or something like that. And he goes, oh, I'm just going to give it to you. And I said, what? He goes, I'm giving you all of it. I said, you don't want us to pay for it. He goes, no. He said, I'm going to donate it. It's my thing. I said, oh, my goodness. I said, is there anything? I said, what do we do? And he goes, just remember the little guy. So we're putting a call out for Jade if you can switch your prescriptions to him or whatever. But he gave everything. Well, then after that, we found out we needed a little bit more. And I said, this time we pay for it. And I got a blood pressure cuff, an oximetry for O2 sat, and some different things. Told him I needed those anyway, and I was going to pay for it. So I sent Emily and Ben in on Tuesday before we left on Thursday, and it was another $82, which I totally planned on paying for it. Had the money, they had it. He goes, oh, no. He said, we're donate this stuff. We donate this stuff. So he gave us almost $900, if not over a little bit, of $900 worth of supplies at his cost, which double that probably for what we would have paid for it. It was not anything cheap. And then Crowder's, we got a hold of them, and they said that they could give us stuff at cost as well. All they needed was Dr. Miller's name on it, and he would give them, and they would sign whatever it was, and we could have it. So we got $1,400 from him at cost, medicine, prescription medicine, everything we needed, and got it there. And then Dr. Snap, which is our dentist, Mommy had went in there and was talking to him, and he said, I'll give you the toothbrushes and toothpaste. And we thought, okay, a few toothbrushes. He ordered us 350 toothbrushes and toothpaste. I don't know that we had exactly that much toothpaste, but anyway, that was a very big go for everybody. We'll tell you about that in a minute. But
when we ran out, it became riotous.
It really did. They were at the window telling that.
Oh, well, they were. I mean, I was in pharmacy. I was filling orders like a pharmacist. And their pastor, Rico, there was explaining to them how to take it.
In their language.
And all of a sudden, I mean, every once in a while, things would get really loud. And they'd be like, oh, they're discussing the line. And they weren't discussing the line. They were fighting over who cut line. So all of a sudden, it gets really loud at the window. But I can hear it, but I'm not really paying attention. All of a sudden, he goes, oh, okay. He comes back to me. He goes, is there any more toothbrushes? I said, no, we're out. He goes, okay. No. And he goes and tells them there's no more toothbrushes. And they was all shaking their bags at the window. It wasn't a toothbrush in mine. And yesterday they had a toothbrush.
So anyway, it was a good thing that we got the toothbrushes. And then Melody Sankey, she gave us some stuff. And then the church up there had put a suitcase out in the back. And I think they gave us like three or four Walmart bags full of medicine over the counter and stuff. And they of course, had been on a trip, so they knew what needed to be given. So they had, like, your cortisone creams and your anti-itch and your fungal stuff and lice. There was a delouser in that bunch. We didn't actually have to use it, I don't think. We probably might have should have, but I don't think we had to use it. And that might have been for us or safekeeping. We're not sure. But anyway, and different ones up there gave stuff. I think Drummond... Twyla had some stuff. We didn't actually get a hold of it, but people volunteered all over. So in all of that happened, we had five people going, and we had 10 suitcases that we could take. Each suitcase could be 50 pounds. Stephen Gibson was already there, and Chelsea was already there. So five of us that were traveling together from Indianapolis. So Stephen Miller told us that he had two or three suitcases, and we had three suitcases, whatever it ended up. We had 10 suitcases left. I can't do my math right now. But anyway, when we got there, every suitcase was within 1 to 2 pounds of being 50 pounds, and we left nothing behind except for some medicine bottles that weren't really, probably wouldn't have been that good of use because we used baggies when we got there. But that to us was pretty cool that we had 10 suitcases, all of them within 1 to 2 pounds.
And everything came in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and it all came in 2 weeks. That exact poundage.
It was a miracle. We were really excited about that. We just sat there and we were like, I can't believe that landed exactly within 2 pounds. Because, we were shoveling stuff and weighing and shoveling stuff and weighing, and it was really neat. So then we flew over there, And we got there, and they had told us, you know, people will be there ready to take your bags. And if you let them take your bags, some of them walk away with it. And if you let them take your bags, you have to pay them lots of money. And we were like, oh, they aren't taking my bag. You know, I have my backpack strapped on hard. It ain't taking my bag unless they take me with it. So Mommy, we rented these little carts for $2 a cart. And we had all our stuff piled high because, you know, we have 10 suitcases. And Mommy's like, she has a hold of the edge of it. And I'm like, Mommy, I'm going to videotape. And you go ahead and you go. So I'm behind her with my video camera watching them. And
so then, whenever we were watching for Stephen Gibson, and so we saw him way over there under some trees. And we're like, okay, there he is. But between us and them is probably 50 people. And some of them have red hats on. So we say, we're hitting right straight for him. So we start out there, and there's all these people, these guys around me. And, of course, they're probably thinking, this old lady cannot push this suitcase. I mean, it was piled high. She cannot push that. We're going to help her. So they come around there, and they try to take a hold. And I'm going, no, no, thank you. And so I'm starting out through there, and they're all trying to grab. And they go, nobody but the red hats. And, of course, they can know enough English to say that. Nobody, you have to have the red hats. So we're looking, and here comes Stephen. You know, we're
and
like,
Mommy just keeps going, no.
We're like, no, no. And so here he's coming, and finally, he says, you have to. The red hat said, no, we have to take your bags. And I'm like, no. You know, I knew they told me no. So anyway, here he comes, you know, and finally he makes it to us, and he goes, we have someone. And I see these two guys coming and grabbing our bags, and he says, those are ours. I'm like, okay. So anyway, they take our bags, and he's there, and he really has to kind of tell them, no, we have our own people. So he stops them, and they take us. And then we get up to the truck, and, of course, it's a big truck, and it's got steps up there, you know. And so anyway, they get our suitcases in there, and all these people
are around.
Are you
going to tell them about the steps?
Yeah, I think I will.
Okay, go ahead.
So anyway, we get there, and, of course, here I am. You know, I'm gray-headed, so I am climbing in this truck. And they come in behind me to push me up in there. And I'm like, this is not going to work. So anyway, they got by with that the first time. But I thought, I am not doing that again because I am not feeble. And even if I have gray hair, I am able to get up in that truck.
Without the big boost from behind.
Yes, yes. No, no. So anyway, after that... That's not funny.
It was funnier then.
So after that, I would scurry ahead before anybody else get there, and I'd climb up in the truck, you know, and I was like, no, that is not my idea of help, you know. So anyway.
We're not talking a gentle handing up here.
No. We're talking a boost.
It was a full-fledged boost.
Picked her up.
Yeah, it was exciting. So then when we got going, we're in this great big old truck. We have it on camera picture somewhere floating around, but this is a great big old truck. It doesn't have great shocks, but the roads aren't great either, so I suppose they worked it out. We bounded along after we got away from the airport. We bounded along just laughing, yeah, this is funny. And then all of a sudden you look in front of you and you see trucks coming right at the vehicle. And they just keep going. And then at the last minute, you know, they'll kind of pull in. But if there's nobody in that lane is yours. You own that lane. And they did. I mean, there would be four people going down the same direction. And then as somebody starts coming, they just all kind of blend back together. A car, a motorcycle, honk, and come running up right between you. It's crazy. And the one time there was a guy on a motorcycle, he come up and he dodged out to see around us and he thought he could make it. And here he come up and somebody must have came at the last minute because all of a sudden, and his wheel disappeared. And Dr. Miller, he stood up and he was looking and he's hanging out the back looking. And the guy sitting there and he backed off a little bit. He goes, looks out he goes and he's gone. I was like, okay, but they have what's called a tap-tap. We have a resemblance of a tap-tap here. It's actually a little Toyota truck with a cab on it that's painted all different kinds of colors, and it says Jesus's truck. Most of them say something about being owned by Jesus. I don't know particularly why, but everything is owned by Jesus or God. Stephen Gibson was telling us, he said, yeah, we've seen the bar and grill, Jesus's bar and grill, and all kinds of stuff like that. Everything belongs to Jesus, which is nice, I think. But yeah, and one thing we noticed between the airport and getting to the house, one of the first things we noticed is that trash really doesn't represent the same thing. We think that people litter on our roads. Their roads are litter. They just line the sides. If there's not a ditch, it's up. If there is a ditch, it's level, because there is water in there holding all of that trash. And they said when it floods, you just see mounds of trash just moving. There is trash everywhere. It was interesting. It was very interesting because we always think when they say no littering that it's kind of like, oh, because they don't want it to look bad. Haiti is a prime example of what will happen if we all litter. They can't drink their water because of the trash. It is amazing. The trash is, I mean, it is something that just hits you. The difference between no trash and trash. They don't have grass, and it's mostly because of the trash. If somebody lives in a certain spot and they aren't there, that's the trash dump, because you're not there to keep everybody from dumping in your yard. And so if you take out the trash, you take it down to where somebody isn't, and you throw it in their yard and go back home. That's taking out the trash there. We got to Pastor Nava's house, and I realized at the very end of it that his name is not Nava, it's Navar. But I still say Nava because it's so much easier. But anyway, we got there, and supper was waiting for us. Supper is sitting under a cover with sheets over top of it. When you take the covers off, the plates are upside down. There is napkins in the glasses because there is dust floating on the air. Alea found that out very quickly. She coughed and hacked from the first day we got there. She did not quit.
Cough drops are a miracle.
And earplugs are too. We had to sleep in the same room. We got there and they kept telling us, oh, there won't be any electricity. We got there and we were like, oh, there's electricity. We didn't even think anything about it. By the middle of the meal, the electricity went off, and we didn't see electricity until Sunday. And Alia said they told us that it would be on at night. It was not on for the first three nights.
And it's very quiet.
It went off till Sunday afternoon. The really interesting thing about that was that I was videoing all that weekend. And Sunday morning, I was running out. I had 16 minutes left to get the church service. I got everything that I wanted from the church service. My video camera died. We got home. I walked in the door, and the electricity came on as I walked in the door. And I ran, and I plugged my video camera in. And I got my video camera all charged, and it gave us bleeps of electricity to where I got video of all of our week. So that was really neat. I guess that brings us up to the clinic, when we get to the clinic.
Mommy had to eat. Yeah, when we got to the table, I might mention the food. Someone at work asked me, how was the food? You know, I said, well, it was dark, and I didn't look at it, and I didn't ask questions. Because, you know, it fed us by the time we were gone all day long. We come in dripping with sweat, hot. You know, whatever was there, we ate, and we enjoyed it. It was seasoned well with hunger. But anyway, when we came to the table, and of course they have a big tablecloth over it, and it's down onto the chairs. So we all kind of go up to our chair and pull it out. Well, I pulled mine out, and I kind of had a start because there's something going there. And there's a setting hen on the chair. And she didn't like it at all that I pulled the chair out from under the table, because she thought she was well hid. And she all fluffed out. And of course, everybody had to see it. We got lots of pictures of the chicken. And, of course, Pastor Nava, it really embarrassed him. And he got it, and he put it somewhere. But it was back nearly every morning. So he must not have hooked it up very good. But anyway, I had to share my chair. I think I really let her have the chair.
Yes, she did.
And I just put pillows on another one and sat beside it, because it was traumatic for her. She thought she had an egg, and she didn't. But anyway.
So we had a big old table with one little chair Mommy sitting in it, and one big chair sitting there with nobody in it. Because when you pull it out, there's a chicken sitting in it.
At one point, I thought we'd ate the chicken because we hadn't seen him for a week.
Yeah,
we didn't see him for a
couple of days, and we thought that we were eating him. We ate a lot of chicken.
Yeah, a lot of chicken legs.
We've sat there. Stephen Gibson got there. He was sitting there eating, and he had been the Dominican before. And he got rice the first day and something else. And I said, "You're not hungry? You don't like chicken?" He goes, "I've been traveling, and I'm just kind of tired of chicken." I said, "Okay." And by the end of the week, I understood why. We had chicken every meal.
We did, except breakfast.
Oh, no, we didn't. We had heart one meal.
Yeah, something heart. Yeah. We didn't want to talk about it, but they kept telling us about it. When we got to the clinic on Friday, we got there and we didn't really know what to expect, but we had seen pictures of the clinic. And what we're used to seeing as a medical facility is non-existent. This clinic had no running water. Getting a bucket of water and a rag to wipe stuff down was a nightmare. I happened to have one of my washcloths in the bag that we had there. And we took that, and they finally dug up a bucket of some kind of water. It didn't look good, but it was better than what we were wiping off. You want to tell them about cleaning up all that?
Oh, Stephen Gibson wasn't very happy. It was supposed to have been ready when we got there, but it wasn't. So in the back, she was going to talk about that.
First. Go ahead there first.
Okay. Anyway, we were cleaning it up, and there was dust everywhere. And, I mean, I'm talking layered dust, not just where you write your name in it kind of dust. I'm talking you could have built a city in it. It was dusty, and it was stuff all over. Well, later, after we got it all cleaned up and everything, I told Lynn, which was my interpreter, I said, "Yeah, we got this cleaned up," and she said, "I've been coughing." That's when I started coughing really bad after that, kept coughing. Me and Chelsea both, the whole week, we would get a catch in our throat and just cough, cough, cough. It was bad. So anyway, after we got done, I looked at Lynn, and I said, "Yeah, we got that all cleaned up," and she goes, "Well, why did you wear a mask, right?" And I said, "No." She goes, "We always wear a mask when we clean up stuff like that." And I thought, and you didn't tell me I should wear a mask. So we all breathed that stuff and everything.
Well, we didn't want to insult anybody.
We didn't want to insult them by putting on a mask. So, and they thought we were crazy because we were doing it without a mask. So it was crazy. And then the dentistry.
Yeah, tell them about
then, some of the back rooms that we worked in, we had to have more rooms than just what they had because there ended up being five of us, you know, that was seeing patients in the clinic. So when we went back to clean some up, there was the dental equipment, dental chairs, x-ray machines, all kinds of stuff. And we had supplied that. If you remember right, years ago, I'm pretty sure that our church bought that equipment. Mm-hmm. And there was a dentist that used that for years and years and years. But somehow that dentist moved on or got rent out or something. So that dental equipment is still there. I'm not sure that it's still serviceable, but anyway, it was still there. But there was a lot of other, like, little things that you would, like, tooth.
Sets of teeth, like this.
Not sets of teeth, but where you would pour plaster in them and stuff like that. So anyway, there was a lot of stuff there that just would probably never be used again. So anyway, we cleaned and cleaned and cleaned, and we got it pretty well together by noon, but it was some fast cleaning because we knew we had to get started because there was already, when we got there, there was lines of people, lines and lines of people. So we got started that day by noon.
One of the things that I realized the first day was, you know, we've been telling ourselves, you got to stay hydrated. You're going to sweat a lot. You got to stay hydrated. So I was chugging water. I'm going to stay hydrated. Well, long about halfway through the day, that water, I was hydrated. And I said, you know, where's the bathroom? Oh, yeah, they said, I'll find that. And I said, well, I told Stephen, I said, well, I'm not in a big hurry, but, you know, and he goes, okay. I don't know how long later, I said, did you ever find the bathroom? He goes, oh, that's right, I was going to do that. I said, well, I'm kind of in a hurry now. He said, okay, yeah. And finally he said, okay, it's that door right there. I said, okay. I went over to the door, and I pulled, and it didn't shut. And I was like, So I went and got Mommy. I said, stand here. So I went in. It was dark, but I could see. You know, after that day, I wasn't worried about staying hydrated so much. I tried to make sure I was a little dehydrated, and I did not use that bathroom again.
And I don't even know where it is.
Oh, well. But they do have a real need there for the bathroom because they have that whole mission complex. They have a school on one side, they have the church, and then they have the clinic. And the bathroom that was there for the church and all of that was taken down in the earthquake. And
with the orphanage.
yeah, the orphanage went down as well. But the bathroom is kind of a big thing because now they don't really have a bathroom on the mission anymore. And Stephen was telling me it's kind of important to get one there. Just they're trying to build the church. It's kind of been under a lot of stress and stuff. And they really need to focus on building up another building and stuff and getting a bathroom there so that the church can go forward in the clinic and everything.
He had planned on that going with us when we went this time.
If we could find somebody to build, yeah.
They have all the people they need to build it, just they need a guy to tell them where to build it.
There was no electricity at the clinic. There was no running water. If you've ever worked in any kind of, if you've ever even heard about medical, you know you wash your hands after every patient. I never saw water until we got home at night. And even then they're like, don't touch that water to your mouth. So we're in there working with all these patients, and we've got these little squeezes of hand sanitizer. We're like, keep on moving. And sometimes it's gritty, and you look, and you've got dust under your fingernails. You can feel it on your neck, and there's no water. And you just think, don't think. Just move on. But, yeah, ready or not, when we got done cleaning, they were like, you need to just quit. We've got to, you know, when we're trying to get stuff out of bags, we have suitcases full of stuff, and we're trying to unload that and get it out. And they're like, you just got to quit. You got to start seeing these patients. It's getting on time. And we were like, okay, so we were like, how's this going to be? And they were like, well, you know, you have five doctors. How many? We got four interpreters. I said, whoa. We have one doctor. They said, oh, no, that's why you nurses are here. You're doctors, too. Oh, okay. So all of us had, Mommy and I went together for the first couple of days because we didn't have enough interpreters to go around. But we all took patients as if we were doctors. We would run back in a corner and say, hey, we got another phone. What do we do with this? And we was all consulting and trying to figure out, you know, if it was something crazy, what to do with them. It was really exciting for a few minutes there. That first day, I got a baby, and there's a picture of her back there. But she had her eyes were matted shut with infection, both eyes, just matted shut. She would sit there on her mommy's lap, and she would look at me. And she said, she's had a fever. She's sick. She's very sick. And I said, well, how long has she been sick? She said, well, she's... And I said, you know, has she been throwing up? Yeah, a little bit. And has she had diarrhea? Yeah, she's had it. I said, well, for how long? They said 15 days. And I was like, my goodness, this baby's got to be dehydrated. So we got her some ointment for the eyes, some gentamicin for the eyes. And I was like, you know, something's wrong. She should not be that sick for over 2 weeks. So I got the doctor, and we was looking at her, and he said, well, she's really bad dehydrated, and she probably has infection really bad. So we got to working on her, and we didn't have any Pedialyte. We hadn't brought any, and they didn't have any, but Pastor Rico said, we can get that. That's something that we can get here. And so we told the mom, we said, here, take this and you know, get started on the antibiotics, start getting her fever down, you know, use the ointment, and then come back and we'll get the Pedialyte for you. And I prayed for that baby every night that weekend because we really weren't sure that she was going to come back. She was really, really sick. And they came back Wednesday and we had the Pedialyte, and she didn't want any of it. She was just bucking, and she... not hard because she was so sick, but she was just not wanting it. And I sat down, and her mommy held her, and she finally, by the time we got done, she started to drink it a little bit out of a syringe. And so we sent it home with her. By Wednesday, she came back, and she was like, tell the nurse. And they were like, she wants you to come. So I went out there, and that baby was sitting there with nothing in her eyes, looking around, happy, and talking to her mom. And I was like, well, something good has come anyway. It was just a really happy feeling because we really were worried about that baby, and somehow God touched it, and it came around, and it was better by the time we left. That mommy was so happy. She was just like, look. And we were like, I know, it's amazing. And it was really neat. So then Sunday morning, we had, we went to
the clinic church,
the church there on the mission. And as it turned out, we had, that was when they did, Pastor Rico was being, what do you call it?
He's given the church.
Ordination like, into
something.
That church.
They spread a sheet over the front. He knelt down, every
in
pastor in there. Yeah. Everybody in there was around telling, you know, praying up for him and all that. It was really a special occasion.
It was. And the children... It was like we were expecting, you know, people to come around in rags or whatever. But these little kids come around, the little boy, and we got pictures of him in white suit and the little girl in a white dress and little white socks, not a speck of dirt. I don't know how in the world they did it. And they had a choir, the ladies' choir. They had white shirts, long-sleeve white shirts, and a navy skirts, all of them to match, and they sang, and they were, I mean, they were dressed nice. And then they had another choir from another church, and they had matching outfits, and they sang so beautiful. They had the choir director got up on a chair and led them, and Destiny has some videos of that, and it was just, they sang beautiful, and they were really spiritual. I mean, you know, you could see one man went around, you know, with his hands up and praising God, and it was just like you were in a church service. It was good, and you knew that they knew God, and that made you really feel good. I said that was one thing we really needed that Sunday service, to see that these people really are serving God, and they really are trying to do what's right, and that was really good, and we were impressed, because we never saw really anyone that was just filthy dirty. They were clean, and they worked hard at it to be clean, because I don't know how you could even walk down the street and not be dirty. But they worked at it, mm-hmm. and they were clean people, and they didn't stink. You know, some of the girls at work, they told me to take Vic Salve and put it in my nose, and so that I wouldn't get sick over the smells and stuff. But I didn't need the Vic Salve. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was. They were clean people.
If there was a baby that was playing in the dirt, you could tell it was today's dirt. It was just that outer scuff. Nobody was covered in dirt. I could count on one hand how many people we saw in rags and dirty. They just weren't. They were clean people every day. When we were traveling back, you had to be careful, but every day they were taking a bath.
Yeah. But there was a lot of things. I think a lot of the shirts and things were from America, because there was Puma and all kinds of name brands. So I think that we as Americans helped them a whole lot, because, like I say, a lot of name brand clothes, and I'm sure it wasn't made in Haiti.
After the service was over, Pastor Rico did a dedication, but then we were supposed to meet with Stephen Gibson and the orphans. Most of you probably remember Brother Poe talking about it. I remember the Haitians, the orphans that we've seen pictures of growing up. Somehow in the mix, whatever happened over there, Pastor Jules took the younger ones, but he left 10 older boys. And when I say orphan boys, I thought maybe they, and by the looks of them, I seriously thought they were maybe 15 to 19. They're 22 to 25. There's 10 of them that live there on the mission compound that we were at, where the clinic was. And they all were there. They wanted to meet with Stephen Gibson, and he sat down with him as an interpreter. It was very interesting. Me and Destiny got to stay in and listen to it. But they wanted to talk to him about what's going on, because to them, they needed a parent. Like, they looked at the mission as their parent. That was who their parent was, and they were asking him to help them out, because a parent would put them through school or would do this for them, and that was very prominent. A parent would put you through school if you had any way possible to go to school. So he was asking them what they wanted, what they needed. They were in clothes, and they were all nicely dressed, so I'm thinking, okay, they're asking for money. This is kind of crazy. Well, then they told him, said all of their clothes were borrowed. They're all about a size small to medium, give or take, but they were all there. And they had borrowed clothes. They had borrowed their shoes, and they were asking that they could have something, because they all wanted to go to the youth convention that was coming up. I don't know. I think, Brother, you went last year, a couple years ago, and spoke at the youth convention. Yeah. Anyway, they wanted to go. That was their big thing. But they were too embarrassed to go to there because they weren't nicely dressed. And in Haiti, it is very you don't come not dressed. You have sharp shoes. You have a sharp outfit. You may have one outfit that you wear every Sunday, but you do come in something very nice. So to them, it was very bad not to have something nice. And they were asking him for clothes and stuff. And then they went through and asked him, each one, what they wanted to be, you know, because they needed to have something that they could have to go on. And he asked each one of them what they wanted to be. Four of them wanted to be truck drivers, which over there, a truck driver is like what we had. They make good money, but it does take training to drive over there. Believe me, it's horrible. There's four of them that wanted that. There was a couple of them that wanted to be, one of them wanted to be a lawyer,
two of them wanted to be lawyers.
two large, anyway, whatever they wanted to be from out of 10 of them, it was anywhere ranging from 300 to 3,000, depending on what they were. At this point, there's only three of them that need something to be to do, but I think we're supposed to get to that later. I skipped ahead, but anyway, that's what they had told him. And it was pretty interesting, and then after it was over, we got pictures, and they looked at Stephen Gibson, and they go, this is the boss, in English, which was kind of interesting that they carried that over there.
So then that night we had Sunday night service at Pastor Ephraim's house. We went to his house and had coconuts, but we went to his church, and that's the big convention center that Stephen has been telling us about, that they have built their convention center themselves. They started out just land block. They raised their own money to lay block. They were sitting on blocks until they had the money raised to have benches. They have a roof on it. They don't have walls on it. Stephen was saying that I'm trying to make sure I don't exaggerate, but I'm almost positive he said that come convention time, they have over 6,000 people in that convention church. They just purchased the land next to it. Do you remember that 30,000? This is the convention center that they just bought that land, and this is Pastor Ephraim. None of the money for that convention center has been given to them from the mission. All they have raised that themselves. They have worked to build that church, and he said, you know, they have worked really hard, and I'd really like to help them. So he had talked to them while we were there, and right now in route is a well drilling machine that they can use to sell wells, because they will, if somebody wants them to come for whatever amount of money, they'll come and they'll drill a well for them, and that'll work twofold to help them raise money for their convention center, but also the churches in the area will get a discounted price and basically be getting it really good price so that they can have a well at their church. So it just did a nice little rounded everybody wins kind of a situation, and that's the church that we were at that night. And we had an experience that night that we just can't help but share because it was so fun.
Yeah, very fun. We tried our best to fit in. And a lot of times when you're in a service, I mean, they're doing something. I mean, a lot of times we thought we might try to sing a song, because sometimes when they clap, one, clap, 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 so they'd get in the mood. So anyway, we thought we might try that, but we weren't good enough, so we couldn't do that. But anyway, we were there, and this girl was up front leading them. And by the way, it really impressed me, because they got the younger people, they could sing if they wanted. She would ask them who wanted to sing, and this one girl got up, and she sang, na, 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 na. And, of course, it was, na, 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 and she was just really, so it made me, and I've hummed that ever since I got home, because, you know, I've sung it, because it's a good song. But they had those songs, and they had those books, and the sides of their books was all bent down where they had sung many, many times. So anyway, they're up there, and they're saying something, and so they're raising their hands, and they're doing that, and of course, yeah, I do. So anyway, we come up the aisle to go to church,
you don't.
And they're so good that they bring us to the front seat. You know, I mean, we would love to sit on the back row. That would have been very nice. But no, they take us right up front to the front seat. So we're sitting up there, and they're over there, and they're saying something, and they're lifting their hands, and they're saying something, and they're lifting their hands. And me and Destiny, we're trying our best to, you know, just lift our hands a little bit. And we look over at Adalia, and she looks at us, and she goes, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So... somehow, we're stressed.
Oh, it tickled them to death.
Stressed, and we're hot, and we're sitting in the front seat, and we're like, we don't know what to do either. You know, we're just trying to lift
down.
Our hands, you know. And so me and Destiny, we got tickled. And here we are on the front seat, and we're tickled. And we're like, you know.
We don't
like
understand
crying.
A word they're saying.
We're not supposed to be laughing, but we. So I put my hand behind my book, you know, and I'm hoping they think I'm praying. But finally, and we'd get over it, and we'd go ahead, and we'd try to go along with it, and pretty soon we'd look at her, and she's got this look on her face like, as if, well, I don't know what I did, you know? We're like, so we laugh again. But anyway,
they enjoyed me going.
We got a little bit out of the service, I think. But anyway, they were spiritual. They were a really good group, and we shouldn't have been laughing, but we couldn't help it.
It was Alia, though. She was such a good time. We went in. We had roaches. They were as big as my thumb. Now, you could say, how do you know it was as big as your thumb? And I will tell you how I know, because I stepped on one, and Mommy goes, oh, I'll get a picture of it. I said, Mommy, if you take a picture of that, nobody will know how big it was. I will put my thumb beside it so that you know. There's a reason they say roaches never die, because this thing was smeared all over that floor, and I put my thumb down there, and he goes, and grabbed hold of my thumb, and I went, oh, like that, and I flipped it, and it disappeared.
And I knew it disappeared.
It disappeared. It was gone. And I was like, magical.
It's
and
somewhere.
I was like, and they're like, we need to eat. And I'm like, okay, let's go eat. I was like, Destiny, it disappeared. We need to find it. I was like, it's gone. Why are we need to find it? She was like, no, we really need. And she was really worried about where this thing went. I said, Aaliyah, stop. So we went out, sat down to eat. And, you know, Chelsea's going to pray for this meal. And we all bow our heads. And all of a sudden we hear, and I'm like, and I look over. And Aaliyah's giving me a dirty look. And I'm giving her a dirty look. How dare you interrupt prayer like that?
And I was saying, how dare you not find the roach before we sit down to pray.
And she had that roach up her skirt when I flipped it. And it got off her skirt onto her leg while we were praying. And to her credit, she did not let out a peep except to jump like crazy around that chair. It was really wild. And she was like, Destiny, Dawn!
Oh.
Wasn't my fault.
I hate that thing.
We thought we'd go over a few of our case studies that we've seen, just some of the interesting ones. I'll start with the one.
Was I going to do that?
Yeah. The one, they came in, they were like, you need to come. We have an emergency here. And I was like, oh, yes, I should be in on this. An emergency.
We know what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm the doctor here. I'll run in there and fix this emergency. And they have the holding this little girl. She's about 11.
Eight.
And mm-hmm. Was she? I don't know. She was little, but she was tallish, so I don't know. But they were holding her stomach and with a towel, and I was like, so they opened it up, and I see red just kind of dumped out of her stomach, and I was like, and they're like, she had surgery, and it's all coming out. And
that's the story I heard, too.
Yeah.
That's what we heard. We all came running.
That's what they said.
I
was like, coming out. Oh, dear. And so I'm like, well, I'm getting gloves on because we're not doing that. And I was like, well, take her in there and lay down. And I got in there, and I was like, there's something wrong. It's not right. It's not coming out. And I kept looking at it, and finally I was like, that's a stoma. They said, no, she had appendix surgery. I said, well, whatever she had, that is her intestines, where they clipped her intestines on both ends and brought it out from her stomach. That is what she, basically, that is where her intestines dumps. So When we actually got everything all moved around and everything, that girl was crying. She did not want me to touch her. And I kept saying, I won't touch you. I'm just going to look at it. Can I just? And she would just cry. Well, when we finally got the towel off, from her stomach starting up here down to below her belly button, it looked like somebody had taken something and went, whoosh, and then gone back up through and sideways went, whoosh, 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 and just grabbed everything and ripped it open. I don't know if she really went in for an appendix or if they were confused, but if she did, it was massive trauma to that little girl. She was terrified to be there, and she wouldn't let us near her. We weren't really sure what was going on because the dad kept saying, it hurts her, and I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, it's underneath. It didn't look infected. There wasn't any visible signs that something was wrong. But he kept saying it hurts. And the more I got to talking to him, the more he was like, well, we don't have any bags. Then ostomy has to have a bag over it and sealed around it to where that drains into a bag. Otherwise, it drains down on her, which it started to do while we were there, and it made a horrible mess. But they had this happen and been trying to piece together something until the clinic opened. And then they thought they would come to the clinic and find some way to get a bag to go back on that. I don't know if she could have surgery and have that fixed. It's possible because if it was an appendix, they could have just clipped something the wrong way and said, you know what, here, just be done with it. So I don't really know, but they were there not because she was in so much pain, but because they really, really needed some way, and they can't afford the bags. They couldn't afford to put a bag over it. Stephen was there, and it was just one of those things. I couldn't get near the little girl. She wouldn't let me touch her. She wouldn't let me see it. She was just crying. She was terrified, and I didn't blame her. I kept telling her, I'm not going to do anything, and I wouldn't touch her. I just stood there and kept talking to her. And Stephen finally came in, Stephen Gibson. He came in, and he said, "What's going on?" And we kind of started to tell him, and I said, "She's really scared." And he goes, "Okay." He went up to her head, and he sat down on the bed beside her, and he wrapped his arms around her, and he started talking to her in Creole. And I don't know what he said, but she went from terror straight down and just laid there. We looked at it. I took something and cleaned it up, and she laid there, and he talked to her in Creole the whole time.
And held her. He held her in his arms.
Yeah, and just whispered to her. He said, and I think he was telling her, "We're going to fix it. It's okay." Because he got up. He said, "Okay, now where can we get these?" And he sent them out. He sent the mission out to get the bags for her. And I don't know if she will be back, because it's something that she doesn't have to have every day, but they do wear out eventually. So she will probably be back. But watching him work with her was an amazing experience for all of us. It was truly incredible.
And it wasn't just one person, though. He could do that with any kid. If a kid would walk up, he did not matter. Okay, over there, they do not wear diapers. They wear diapers, but no plastic over it. So in church, I found that out in church Sunday. I held a little kid, and I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, I looked at Mommy, and I said, "I hope to goodness she doesn't fall asleep too soon." And there she was. She was asleep. Well, then they evidently know that, because they get sheets out and lay them out. But anyway, he will pick up a kid of any sort, any time. It does not matter. And he will hold them and hug them. And an adult, he will wrap his arms around it. He has no – it was amazing. He loves those people. I mean, that is his calling, and they love him, and they can feel it. I mean, we're there. We're helping. And, yeah, we're there for a little bit, a week, but not him. They know that he is theirs. Mm-hmm. They know what he feels, and he can see it. It's just there, and we could see it too. Let me go ahead. We had quite a few. I'll try to hurry. Sorry. There was a 9-day-old baby. She was probably, I have pictures back there. She's probably about this big. She was a preemie, wouldn't eat. Her mommy said, "She's not doing very good. She won't eat." And I was like, "Well, is she, you know," I got worried at first, and then I got to look at her and I didn't see anything wrong. And they said, "Well, she just sleeps all the time." And I'm like, "Okay, Brianna did this. I got this one." So I took all of her clothes off, which really disturbed her mother, very much disturbed her mother. And I patted her, and I rubbed her down, and I got her all woke up, and we got her hooked on and eating, and she'd eat, and she'd eat for about 5 minutes, and the mom goes, "Oh, she's done." And I said, "Oh, no, she's not done. You need to feed her more." And thanks to Christy, who taught me all this before I left, but that with Brianna. But it was that one, I think, I thought, well, maybe it's the first child. No, it was her fourth. And I thought, well, maybe she's very grateful that she's sleeping, and that's what she did.
One thing about it, though, she said she unwrapped her. Every baby over there has at least one blanket on. That baby had, like,
two.
Three.
Yeah.
It was, and I'm not talking like, oh, it's kind of warm. When we got there, my back was running sweat. I was dripping. These babies are encased in blankets because they like blankets. I thought, oh, my goodness, if they live.
Gonna die.
My goodness, it's so hot.
You want to tell them about your cut
friend? Okay. And I had a little boy. And the grandma brought him in, and he had a kind of a bandage around his foot, and she was telling our interpreter, you know, that he got a bottle cut his foot. So we're like, well, we got to unwrap this and clean it and redress it. So we start unwrapping, and when we unwrap it, it kind of fell off, and this black stuff, just shavings, just started falling out of it. And I'm like, oh, no, what is that? Because I wasn't sure if it was alive or it was what was wrong. So anyway, we finally decided, you know, we was going to get it all cleaned up. So we cleaned it all up. And then sometime during this course, our interpreter, you know, the grandma told the interpreter that that was tobacco, that it was bleeding real bad, and she had put tobacco on it to make it quit bleeding. And it evidently did okay. But we cleaned it up and dressed it up, and we sent it home with Coban around it, and it looked nice, and we sent her some extra dressing to do it later. So that made us happy. You know, we was really glad it wasn't anything alive. So
then we had a little boy. I had a window where I was. There was two different, we all had windows, but mine was low enough for people to come to it. And I had people at it all the time, like little kids, not people, but kids would come to my window. Well, the first day I had a little boy, and somehow they can understand just a little bit of English, and he said, "Addison." I said, "My name's Adalia. What's yours?" He goes, "Addison." I said, "Oh, hi, Addison. How are you?" He goes, and he pointed at something, and I was like, "No, because they told us not to give any candy, because if you did, your window would be lined up completely the whole week." And this was on Friday when we just got started, and I knew I did not have enough time to worry about my window being charged every day. So I said, no, come around. And I kept putting him to come around. He just sat there and looked at me, and we'd talk. I can't speak a bit of Creole. He couldn't speak anything but his name, and it was not good. So anyway, every day he would show up, and he'd point. And I would just look at him, and he'd point. And I'd say, no, I can't. And it broke my heart, because and then Pastor Nav actually came in and was interpreting one time for me, and he told me to give it. And I said, if I do, everybody gets one. And he goes, oh, okay, go play. And I was like, oh, great. I feel bad, you know, because even the pastors want me to give it to him. Well, the last day we were all done, Pastor Nava was given his speeches are a very big thing over there. They give certificates for everything. So anyway, we're in this thing, and it was getting very hot. Well, I saw over at the window that he was there. So I went out there, and I gave him, he was there, and I had extra candy. So I gave him a piece of candy. He goes, no. And I was like, what? And he goes, points to his head, and he has a rash completely covering the top of his head, which is a fungus rash. He goes, and I said, do you want something for that? He goes, like that. So I got Stephen Gibson. We went and got it, and I took him out. And he had been coming by himself every day because he couldn't. It was a dollar. But I don't know if his parents couldn't get him there. But every day he would come to my window, and he was wanting to be fixed. It wasn't that he wanted candy, which broke my heart, but he wanted to be fixed, and I didn't know it. So, but we fixed him.
And we did have a little boy that had an extra finger, and the reason why they came was that little finger sticking off to the side, and we have pictures of it, was infected. So I kind of felt around and checked it out, and we kind of wanted it to be taken off because it was just kind of hanging there. And I don't know why it didn't, you know, at that point, why it hadn't been knocked off. You know, it was just kind of hanging there. And we said something to the doctor, and he's not a pediatrician. He was an internal medicine, and he kind of said, no, you know, he didn't want to deal with it. So we didn't have it taken off, but I was pretty sure I knew how to do it. You know, all you'd do would be take a thread or something really tight, and then every day tighten it and make sure, give an antibiotic. I thought, boy, if I was around very long, that little extra finger was going to come off. But then later, later we said something to the doctor, and he said, I probably could have taken that off. And I was like, now you tell me. I cannot find the boy, you know, and a million people. I wouldn't be able to find the little boy again. But I'm pretty sure he would have been happy had we got that taken off. But anyway.
Mommy would have been too.
Yeah, it bothered me. So anyway, we're running.
Seemed like every time we turned around, there was somebody saying, so what did you bring us? What are you going to give me when you go? And there was just different people, different places. They said, so what are you going to leave us? And they asked Dr. Stephen Miller that the one time. He said, what are you going to leave me? And he said, he sat there for a minute, and he said, I'm going to leave you memories. And he laughed. Oh, that's funny. And then a few minutes later, he said, so we only got 3 days left. What are you going to leave me? And it was just kind of like that with everybody. It wasn't. Sometimes it was subtle. Sometimes it was just outright, so where's the money you're going to leave me when you go? And here and there, it just, after a while, you kind of had this odd feeling like they don't really care that we're here so much as what we're going to give them when we leave. But it was like that in different places, but there were some there that they worked hard. They would do anything that they would just work with unflinching determination and never ask for anything. And different ones of them we had been talking to, and we would start talking about their ministries and what they were doing. And God kind of just led us around to asking certain questions and the right questions. And we kind of just wanted to let you know, some of them, that they never asked us for anything. But as we asked them, what could we do? What could we do to help your ministry? They had ideas. They just don't have the money to build their ministry up. They are ministering. There is things happening in Haiti. God is there and God is moving. And we just kind of wanted to show you just a little bit of the need, not that they don't all have need, but the need that would be progressive, that would actually, you can see where it would go. And we kind of just wanted to present that to you just a little bit.
Yeah. We had one lady, Sister Vito. Vito, it's Phito, I think. But anyway, she was about a middle-aged lady, and she was she just had the countenance of her face, just was absolutely a beautiful lady. And what she is over the women's group. And they have a conference, and at this conference, the ladies come, and I think she said at least 500 came. And we asked her what she did, and she said, we're there to encourage each other. And so we got to talking about it, and she said, we're there to help each other spiritually. And we asked, what about Bibles? Well, they don't have Bibles. The women don't have Bibles. And we said, well, would you like to have New Testaments or Bibles? And she said, oh, Bibles. Said they would like a Bible of their own. So that really impressed us, because they wasn't wanting clothes. They wasn't wanting anything. They were wanting a Bible. And so that just really helped us. We thought, how wonderful for her. She's kind of over the group for all these ladies to come in, these 500 or more ladies, come in together and talk about, she said, about their problems, in their homes. And it's not like one of us going over there, because we don't know their problems. We don't know what their trials are, but she does, because she lives there. Actually, she makes a living by selling charcoal. And she showed us, she lived right across from Pastor Nava, and she showed us the big bags that she has of charcoal. And she makes a living for, I think she has 3 children at least that's still home. And she makes a living for them. But she also is over the women's conference. And also on a Sunday afternoon, she has a ministry of children, 63 children in the house next to Pastor Nava's house, which is a house he built for his daughter. And then I think they got married. She got married and went to America or something. But anyway, every Sunday afternoon, she does crafts with those 60-some, and they were singing, and she was smiling, and do you want to talk about that? But it was beautiful, and she does this every Sunday, and she didn't do it because we asked her to, or anybody else asked her to. She did it because that was her ministry.
So she also has been encouraging the women that she's over to reach out, and giving for them is very hard because they don't have much to give, but the legal minimum wage there, I think they said, was $5.50 a day. They're not supposed to be able to make less than that, but very few of them make that much. She and those ladies have got together and made gallon bags with toilet paper, soap, shampoo, conditioner, toothbrush, toothpaste, a big bag. And they go calling at the hospital and deliver these bags to people at the hospital. That doesn't seem like much, but that is really a lot of money for them. And they are giving that. She is going out and giving that. It's not just something that they do to say, oh, yeah, we're trying. She's really working at it, and she's trying to draw their people together. It was very encouraging. We are going to go ahead and inquire from the Gideons, and we're going to start looking into how we could get them Bibles to go down there. She said if they don't give them to the ladies, they can also go ahead and put them in the baskets that they take to the hospitals, which would be just as good. Another person that we talked to and were really impressed by was Pastor Rico. He was the one who was put over the mission. We were talking about what he was doing, and he said, well, he has 2 bakeries that he's been running. He just did take over. He said he runs 2 bakeries. He goes to bed at midnight, he gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and he works hard all day long, and he runs 2 bakeries. I said, 2. He said, yes, one is for me and my family, and the other one is to support the mission. And he has not been the pastor of the mission until now. So he has been running 2 things, and half of it goes to the mission and half of it supports his family. He was an incredible man. He said, but now I have to run the clinic and I have to run the church. I said, oh, so your bakeries? He goes, oh, my wife will run those. Said, oh, she's good too. So I asked him, I said, so is there something that could be done that would help financially help the mission? Is there something, is there a project that could be done that would help build the mission bigger? He said, yes. I said, well, what is it? And he said, well, he said, if we had the money, we could build a concrete building and put in, he goes like this, and I said, the air conditioner. He goes, yes. But air conditioners, he said, normally it takes 12 hours to turn water to ice. He said, normally that's what their systems do. He said, but we will get a good one to do it in 3, because we don't ever have 12 hours of electricity. So they only have 3 hours. So he's going to build this around the electricity to where in 3 hours they have ice, they have water turned to ice, and they have pop that turns to ice, and then they will sell it to people who will go running up the streets And we have pictures of them on the street selling water and pop on the streets. And he said, that will be instant turnover. He said, make lots of money the first day. I said, so how much would that cost to do that? He said, I think he said I know it was 3,000 U.S. dollars, but I think it was 300 Haitian dollars or something. Anyway, and so it was about $3,000 to put that in. And I was talking to Stephen about it. He said, the neat thing about that is that they have the money, and he's talking to Pastor Rico about taking on a water purification system. They have the money to do that. And when he accepts that, if somebody could build him that ice maker, he would have the purification system to where he doesn't have to buy purified water, put it in and turn it right over. There's no money going out. It's all just money turning over into the mission. So that was a really neat idea. He was a very, very smart businessman. He understood what it took, and he was a really neat guy.
You can tell about the orphans. Yeah. Back to where I was, where I said about the orphans. Basically, all we needed, they were saying what we needed for that was the 300. I think I already told
you. Did you?
I think so. 300 to 3,000 for each orphan, but they have three of them right now that needs to be, they need three now that needs to go to school now, coming up this next semester. Thing about it is, and that we kind of ask them, the orphans are kind of rough. They have their issues. But the thing about it is what they kind of talked to me a little bit, and they kind of were sweet. But they had their issues. If we can, maybe we can't save all 10 of them. Maybe all 10 of them won't end up in church. But if we save one, that's what matters. Mm-hmm. So they were kind of my champion, I guess, because I was like, you know, they don't have a chance in this world at all. If they don't get something to help them, they're out on the streets, and it's all messed up. So maybe they are a little rough, but if somebody would take one orphan, and $300 to put one through trucking school is nothing to us, really. I mean, that takes them 2 years. It's not like you have to give it, like, over time. But, I mean, $300 to go through college where they will actually have a degree when they're done and they can support a family. You know, and they will look to the mission as their mom and dad when they're done. That's who their people are. That's who they say is theirs. And I said, even if we save one, that is something that we can say, you know, it may not have got all of them, but we gave them all a chance. So,
yeah. I think one thing that we left out was one thing that Brother Gibson is trying to do is to get to support themselves. And he has one lady of the church that they gave her money to start the chicken farm. And we went out there. She wanted him to come and see it, and he didn't have time, so he told us to go out. We went out and took pictures, and they bought her like 1,000 chickens. And she sold them and gave so much to the church and bought her another group of chickens to raise and sell. And she is in the process, and I mean, it looks good. It looks like almost like American, where she has lines where the water line comes in, and the feeders are there, and the feeders are all there, and it was clean, and it looked really good. So I thought, wow, everybody over there needs to start a chicken farm, because they don't have much meat, and they make money. So I thought that was really neat. And if they can just get the people to have a vision, you know, how to support themselves. And Stephen told us, he said, don't give them anything. Don't give them money. They should be feeling like you are part of their ministry. So don't just give them everything. You know, they need to learn that their hard work is what has helped them grow. So I was very impressed. That was, he did good, really good.
One thing I forgot too, the boys are wanting to go to convention, and they, Stephen said that he would give them the money to go. It's like, I don't know, $20 a kid to go to convention, but they need clothes, and he can take it over in July. This month, they have a group going this month. They need small and medium sized shirts. Bright men's colors are good. Men's small and medium. They do like the bright colors. If you find anything at yard sales or whatever, and jeans, there's, just to give you an idea, like Jonathan and Gabriel's size, that those, they're not any of them taller than that. They're all probably even a lot shorter than that. But anyway, if anybody has anything like that, we're going to get two suitcases ready to go. And shoes-wise, they say it costs $10 a shoe. And I was talking to Glenn, and she said if what they can do, they got $10 over there. And I'm telling you, our style shoe and their style shoe is a lot different, a little bit more, I don't know how to, suave maybe. But if they get 10 pairs of shoes, they all swap them around. So they don't all just wear one pair of shoe. Even if they're not all quite the same, they'll buy 10 pairs of shoes, and then they swap it around a little bit. Can I say something? There's one more thing with the clothing over there. We went skirt shopping because everybody over there wears skirts. If you see somebody in jeans, it's not very unusual. I mean, girl-wise. But anyway, the women wear skirts. So we went looking for skirts. Skirts over there are from China, and they're all one size. So the fact that they don't maybe all look exactly like us and they're not all long or whatever, they're wearing what they can get most of the time, and it's not very pretty sometimes. But so the fact that if we would give them clothes, if they could get something from here, the clothes-wise, the shoes I think they could pretty much come by, but the clothes is a little bit of an issue. Not so much, probably for the boys too, but. Oh, and then Sister Jewett, I've heard of Sister Jewett somehow through time. I don't know if any of the rest of you remember, but she does the children's ministry, and she has over 73 churches that she works with. I got to talk with her through an interpreter and through Stephen for a little bit, and we were trying to talk about different things that we could do. I was going to talk to Eloise and Carla and Wilma back there about trying to get some stuff, but if they're wanting to make them songs and then send it over to them, it was one of the things we were trying to do. And she also, that way she could have a certain group that they, I guess the Seventh-day Adventist over there is very big that they go off of. So if they're going to try to get me the program that they can get, and then we'll design it so that all 73 churches either get the same song, that way when they get together they can have it, or get, they have their own songs, or give them a new song that they can learn, and then she would teach it to 73 different churches. So they're trying to get that together too.
Like laminated.
Yeah, laminated songs.
That's like what we
hold up for the kids to sing.
Because they don't have anything like that. There is no, and that's one thing, they have no toys. There is no toys in Haiti. The fact that we brought little frogs, they thought they were candy, but we brought little frogs, Chelsea did. There's no toys. We went to find a toy for the little Kaisha, which is who was at the compound. There was a bag of old dolls that looked like half of an arm or a leg was missing and was nasty. But because we wanted, Stephen had told her he had got her something, or he would get her something. So we ended up finding something else that we had brought with us to give her. But we went looking for a toy. There was no toys. We couldn't find toys anywhere. So the fact that we gave them something was just thrilling to them. So not that it's the main thing you want to take over when you're trying to take medicines over is toys, but it does break your heart when they don't have anything to play with.
Yeah. And then one last one was Samuel was one of our interpreters. He's about 24 or 25. And he would come and stay at the house with us because we can't, after Stephen Gibson left, we couldn't speak to pretty much anybody without Samuel or one of them around. And I would be talking to Sister Fito, and she'd be sitting there, and she'd smile, and I'd be motioning and explaining something to her, and she'd smile, and I'd ask her something, and it'd just hang there for a minute, and she'd go, Samuel! And here he'd come, and he'd explain everything, because we couldn't really communicate very well. It was things that you thought that you could get through, because you know, surely we can motion this through. It did not work. But Samuel stayed there. He didn't receive any more pay than the regular interpreters that were only at the... They were only at the clinic, and he didn't receive any more pay, but he would come in. He said when he was little, his dad left them and had put him in a school, but it wasn't a good school, and he had gotten a lot of trouble. And Pastor Nava had started coming around and talking to him, and they told him, they said, he's a bad boy, and he said, I was. He said, but Pastor Nava did not stop talking to me. He kept talking to me, and he kept telling me about Jesus. He said, and one day I just thought, you know what? I will have that. He said, I want what he has. He said, so I stopped going around with my friends, and I came to church, and I became a Christian. He said, I said, what do you think is the hardest thing about being a Christian? He said, being lonely. He said, I lost all of my friends. He said, I had very good friends, very, very good friends. He said, but he said, I had a friend that I had since I was little, and I had gone to school with them, and when my dad left, they had took me in because my mom couldn't support all three of us. He said, and they took me in and they put me in school. He said, when I became a Christian, they put me out and they would not be my friend anymore. He said, and that has been very hard. He said, but it is what I will do. He said, I will be a Christian. And he said, Pastor Nava means a lot to me. He said, when I come over here, he makes sure that I am one of the interpreters because he hopes that I will do well in school. He's in interpreting school. He said, and he helps me. He said, but the best thing is when I'm here, he will tell people, he says, this is Samuel. He is my son. And he just got real quiet. He goes, I really like that. That means a lot to me. And I was like, yeah, I know. And I just talked to him, and he never said, you know, I could really use money for school, but you know, we were talking off and on, and he said it cost $70 a month for him to go to interpreting school. And he made $15 a day, and he worked for 5 days. So he, in the 5 days, he earned just about enough to make it through school for 1 month. I said, so what do you work when you're not doing this? He said, I don't. I said, you don't have a job? He said, no, just interpreting. I said, how do you get through school? He goes, I save. He said, I save everything. He said, sometimes people come and they say, Samuel, I will help you for a month. He said, and I think, oh, I want to buy nice shoes and nice pants and a nice t-shirt. He said, but I don't, because I have to save, because I have to pay for it next month. And he said he has a year and a half left, and that, and then he will be an interpreter, a certified interpreter. He said, if I make good grades, they will help me get a good job at the hotels. So that's his goal. And I said, so if everything went just as you planned it, what would you like to do? He goes, huh? I said, if everything went perfect, you got a best job and everything went really well, what would you do? He said, I don't know. He said, maybe God give me a family. I said, yeah. He said, but if not, maybe I will travel around. He said, I love language. He said, and maybe I will travel to countries and learn all the languages. I said, okay. But he was really neat. And all that time, as many people as said, where's my money? And all of that talking about how hard it was for him, he never breathed a word of it. Chelsea had asked him to go get something, and he said, yeah, he would. And she started to hand him money a little bit later, and he looked at her and he said, why are you doing this? I don't want your money. She said, no, it's because I asked you to buy that. He goes, oh, he goes, sorry. And he just moved on. But he thought she was giving him a handout, and he was like, don't be just handing me money. So he was a really neat case for the area. Just the culture is not conducive to that kind of thinking, and it was a really neat thing. Just some of them are just kind of bright lights, and all of them really, really give you an encouraging thought. They live a different lifestyle, but yet they're just part of God's family, and they have so much to learn. But Stephen Gibson is doing an amazing job trying to teach them. He tries to build up the leaders. He teaches them how to teach their church. It's not just I'm going to go over there and I'm going to give them a bit of money and I'm going to help them drill well. He doesn't do that. He doesn't do that at all. He goes over and he teaches them how to teach each other. His sermons on Sunday morning and Sunday night, the Sunday night was impromptu. He didn't know he was preaching, and he got up there and he just lit in. I was like, oh, that was good. But he is an amazing speaker, even through an interpreter. It was just, he was really amazing. So all of that just kind of gives you a quick synopsis of what we went through. It was really exciting. It was a really neat thing to do. We had a really good time, and we're glad to be home. But we really appreciate everything that was done so that we could go. We appreciate God's help. We could not have done it without him. There was no way we could have got that medicine together and there and everything else. It was a really amazing, encouraging experience. And we thank you all for making it possible.